Hey everyone, this is Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. I grew up in the greater Seattle area and have lived in the Pacific Northwest my whole life. There is a wonderful, vibrant music scene up here with an incredibly welcoming community. And growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast will explore the Northwest music scene, how to navigate it, the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. This is Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast blew me away at Numos back in January, opening for Iodot and the Uppercuts. And 4 short months later, he's going to be back Friday, June 8th, as a headliner and coming off the heels of his latest single, Exit That Way. Please welcome a recent expert on Canadian paranormal activity, Nick Weaver.
That is a hell of a way to introduce an artist right there. Yeah, I love there you that. Go. I think that might be the first and last time I ever get introduced like that.
Yeah. That's what this is all about. That's really why you're here.
Right. Yeah, I just came intro. To break ghosts down for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so how did that come to be? You were on Canadian radio.
That's right. Yeah.
Talking about paranormal activity.
Yep.
Well, a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, so I actually did an interview with CKCU-FM, which is an Ottawa-based radio station, and they have a late-night program called The Witching Hours, and they play your music, and they ask you a lot of stuff about, you know, the artist, but they also, the side caveat is they ask a lot of stuff about the paranormal, the afterlife. I mean, there was so many questions that I've never had to field on an interview, yeah. And it was awesome. The host, Kanaska, is super lovely, and you know, she was really appreciative of everything that we were talking about. So that's nice. that's where the ghost specialties came from. Now I'm versed. Now I'm ready.
There you go. How did that come about? So yeah. Does the station just hit you up and go, hey, we've got this segment? Or is it someone that was a fan of your music?
Well, God bless YouTube, because she, the host, Kanaska, had found me through just a suggested YouTube video. She found the What You Doing These Days video, and she messaged me on Facebook right after that and was like, hey, I just saw this video, really love what you're about, and that was it pretty much.
Nice.
So, props to YouTube.
It's crazy, the platforms now, the methods of discovery,
yeah,
are growing every day.
Yeah, it's really nuts. I mean, I talk to a lot of fans that tell me, you know, where exactly they found me, and there's all different, yeah, you hear it like, of course, you hear Spotify and the streaming services, but yeah, YouTube is one that I hear even people talking about. Yeah, I saw like my friends retweet somebody that they knew on Twitter, and then I looked it up. You know, so it is definitely a way to. There's just so many opportunities for it.
Yeah, what's the most random place someone's told you they discovered you?
God, there's this amazing. I screenshotted it. It's so great. This guy wrote like, I'd have to dig it up, but he's like, it was on YouTube and he commented on my song, Good Lord. And he said like, I was actually trying to find the song Good Lord by, and then he named like, I don't even know, like some really obscure, like 60s or 70s band, maybe not that obscure, but like, I definitely didn't know who you were. Uh-huh. He's like, and then your result was the second one down, and it just played afterwards. And that was a really lucky find for me because I love this song.
That's dope.
Yeah, that's definitely the most random that I could think of.
For sure.
Yeah.
How do you go about discovering music?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm starting to shift with the times. Like whatever Spotify throws to me, suggested stuff, you know, if I play LCD Sound System, whatever it comes up with after the, you know, the songs by them that I play, whatever suggested artists, like those are pretty good. I still, probably cause I'm old school, I still love just like word of mouth from the homies, you know, like I have a little core group of friends that just like, we all like kind of text each other when new songs come out, and that's kind of my favorite way, because there's like people that you sort of share similar tastes with, you know, and you know what each other's going to like. And so my buddy Quinn, who's actually, he was the director for both those, What You Doing These Days and the gospel video. Like, he listens to a ton of music and he's always putting me on to new stuff.
Right on. What are you listening to lately? What's got you?
Yeah. I am listening to, I'm going to butcher this name, but, it's like a indie, for lack of a better description for the genre, indie singer songwriter kind of guy named, Amin Dunes or something. Amen Dunes, something like that. I'm totally screwing that name up, but, no worries. But he's really, really dope. Like, I haven't been that into that kind of folky indie music that much lately. And I thought there's pieces of his stuff that was super inspiring. So, yeah, that I still listen to Frank Ocean Blonde almost every day. And let me think what else. I mean, those are kind of my big ones. I go to the gym a lot, so I listen to the Nipsey Hussle Victory Lap constantly when I'm working out or stapling flyers up or trying to just constantly be on the grind. That kind of keeps that motivation music going.
Yeah.
So that's a wide range of stuff right there. But yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Also one last, great for like when you're doing your real busy work and you can't, and you just need to focus, the, what's his name? Trent Reznor, his Vietnam score PBS Vietnam thing. That score is crazy. And I listen to that quite a bit when I'm like doing all the business side of stuff that I hate, but I need to focus.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Soundtracks are the way to go for me personally too. If I'm at work or whatever I'm doing.
Yeah.
I can't have like lyrics running or whatever. Right. Scores are the best, like Hans Zimmer.
Yeah. I think it's a musician thing too. It's like, if you're in music at all, like I'm just wired to immediately gravitate towards listening to the words. And it's so crazy. Like a song with lyrics comes on and my focus for whatever I'm doing just dissolves, you know?
Yeah. Totally feel you. That's exact same here.
Yeah.
But I guess just completely rewinding it. But before all this, how did you get started? Were you in a musical family, or what inspired you to kind of move in the hip hop direction?
So my big brothers growing up, they had all, you know, especially my big brother, Russ, he had all the tapes, a lot of West Coast, a lot of East Coast stuff. And so when I was pretty little, I just always remember him playing a lot of that stuff in his car whenever we were running errands or hanging out together. And so he kind of got me introduced, and I always just sort of gravitated towards how lyrics sounded over those beats at the time, that the rhythm with the snap in the head. And I mean, really at like 7 or 8 years old, you know, kind of getting into it. And yeah, one thing sort of led to another, and I just started writing. I actually started writing lyrics on this really, really obscure internet forum back in the day when I was like 12 years old, logging on to the 56K and typing out lyrics for these forums. And that is how I started just getting into actual hip hop. And then, you know, in high school I would record, you know, I had a buddy who had a pretty decent studio. And so I would record with him, my buddy Chase Baldwin. And, you know, I would just put out mixtapes and sell them, burn them on CDRs, sell them around the high school, right off the spindle, you know, dollar a CD. And, that's really how I got into it at the initial phase, you know, but that was before I got really into it as like a professional thing. Right. I always kind of, it's, you know, you look back on it and I just remember being like, this is all I got to really do. And then I'll be, you know, at some point I'll be there, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you like smash cut like 7 years later and you're not even started on that professional tip. I just, you know, like, went to college and got sidetracked with like an actual professional job in the event marketing industry. And then I moved to LA for another job that was in the same type of field. But then that's where I really got into it for real. I think getting away from my home and my friends and family, like while it broke my heart, it kind of forced me to just be a little more independent, you know? And looking back, it's like, I mean, it was kind of that I was like really, I was 50-50 on even going at the time. And so I look back and I don't even know what would be if I didn't take that journey, you know? Cause that when I got to LA is when I really learned everything that it took to do this the right way, you know?
For sure. And yeah. How long were you down there for?
Just shy of 3 years. Yeah. I moved down there. I took this job, for a tech company, and was still on that kind of full-time career path. And then one thing led to another. I just start churning out actual recorded mixtapes again, putting them online. And then I just like total, you know, like one of those total fate moments. This guy, one of my really, really good close friends, Hillside, who his imprint is on everything that I do from this point on. Like I owe the world to that guy, but he had a little studio right in the parking lot of where I worked, and I would just get out and, you know, it didn't help that I really didn't like the job I was at. And so I would get out, you know, kind of sulking, getting ready to go into the job. And I just would hear beats coming out of this little studio. And so one day I just popped my head in, introduced myself. And that was kind of that. We just started recording together a bunch. I mean, we recorded that Day One None album together. He produced everything on the Yardwork EP that came after that. He's nice. Also an incredible singer. So that's where, you know, and at that point I'm finally recording professionally, you know, with all the proper gear and proper recording instruments and whatnot. And that's when it, you know, leveled up, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So what was like inspiring you to, was that job, as much as you didn't like it, a conduit for hip hop, or were you just thinking about completely different things when trying to write?
That's a good question. I think by the time I, because actually that the way that job ended is that company was starting to struggle, and so I actually ultimately got laid off. And at that point, I was in LA, laid off, kind of floating around for a bit, couch to couch type scenario, and that drove a lot of what was in the Yardwork album. I remember a reviewer once wrote, they kind of tagged Yardwork as like the Nick Weaver emo album, talking about his life problems and stuff. And I laugh at that, but that is kind of true. You know, that one really, that one had some of the darkness that came with that whole period of time. You know, there's other things in my life as well that were going on. But as I continued on, like, you know, the Prowler LP, which I put out in 2016 after Yardwork, I had kind of hit that point in my own life and my own career. And I think I still have, where I didn't really want to write about like the come up and like the perseverance of the grind and the independent artist just trying to do whatever it takes, because it just had, like, I still like to hear that from other artists, but I personally just felt like nothing I was putting out was ever gonna like move me like that. So the lyrics in Prowler were very much like, I kind of went backwards in terms of just like going super abstract and talking about like day-to-day life, but in a way that was, that I tried to make very abstract, you know, like I Nas, you know, despite apparently some pretty shitty things going on in his personal, that have gone on in his personal life that are starting to arise up. You know, Nas's style of lyricism was something that was always really, really motivating to me, and hearing these like really vivid descriptions of stuff. So yeah, Prowler was a lot more of an abstract type thing. And as I've moved forward on to, you know, like the Photographs of Other People EP, that kind of came back full center towards, I guess I'm writing more from personal experience, but I kind of want to write it in more general terms that people can kind of like absorb these bigger messages, you know, and not just come at it from that angle of like the older stuff that was like, I'm on the grind. I'm relentless in trying to make it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. A little voice crack there. So like what brought you back up to Seattle then?
Yeah. You know, to be honest, family, my whole family lives here.
Yeah.
My folks, my brothers. And I'd kind of, you know, I think in LA too, I hit that point where I was starting to realize that you know, you still got your home is your home. And, you know, fast forward now, it's like when I came back, it was like, you know, no one knew who I was as an artist or whatever. And I had to definitely hit the ground, just take whatever shows I could get, smash tickets out to as many people as I could get. And now it's like, you know, got a co-headlining show at Numo's, right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
On Friday night. And that is because I've really relished just being back in my home, using all my connections. And LA has a lot of great elements to it when it comes to like being creative, because everyone is creative there. The pool of people and tools down there that you can work with and make your art great is endless, right? But like, I think when it comes to really doing your own thing, yes, there's absolutely artists that can go down there and make a local buzz and continue to go upward, you know? But like, for me, I realized that it was more reasonable to go home and do it from there, because, you know, this is my home. This is what I know.
Yeah, for sure. And you noted too that some of the relationships you have down there have an imprint on what you're doing now. So
right.
With the internet and all of these things, are you leveraging that to still collaborate with people you met in LA, or have you kind of just said, you know, I'm up here now, I'm going to focus on this scene?
Oh, no, don't. I mean, you know, I send stuff to, his name's Frankie, his artist name is Hillside, but I send stuff to Frankie quite a bit, and, you know, nothing has, like, he's definitely, like, we always talk about still doing something at some point. And there's a lot of like great video directors and other kind and even engineers down there that I still keep the door open with. It's just, you know, it's like when you're working locally, it's just, you end up like, you know, oh, I'm going to jump into the studio with so-and-so like tomorrow, 'cause we just decided that. But no, I mean, I would hope to be able to get back and do another project with Hillside at some point. 'Cause, he's an incredible talent. And like, I can't even tell you how much I owe to that guy. Like, he just messaged me like about a month ago about one of the songs that he produced. It was the intro off the Yardwork EP. And like, he just said like the nicest, kindest thing about that moment, you know? And when we were in that moment, we weren't really realizing it, but his point was like, that was an amazing moment. Like, we were like perfect symmetry, producer, artist, like just killing it. And, it was super, I was like tearing up, 'cause it was like so sweet of him to say, you know. And yeah, so long story short, yeah, doors are definitely open for anyone that's still down there, but right now it's just, you know, the way it works, just being local, I keep it a little more local
for sure.
Yeah,
so while you say you keep it local, you're also having a lot of success
right
elsewhere, which is really awesome, and I mean that in absolutely the best way. So one of the things being you were on tour in Europe,
right? Yeah.
So how do you go from, okay, I'm in LA, I move back home, and all of a sudden you're on tour in Europe? Obviously it's not just like,
yeah, right. Yeah. Not a snap, but I mean, but yeah, you know, like most of us, you see the highlights. So you gotta put the pieces together. And that all stems from, a video that was put out by Super Street Magazine, which is like the nation's largest like auto publication, you know, sports cars and things like that. And they used my song in it, and that song, and it just kind of was flooded with people all over the world asking, what's up with that song? Who's that artist? You know, like hundreds of comments. And it ended up being some of these people that were German, and they would email me and ask me, hey, saw the song in the car video, loved it, can I use it? Absolutely, you know, of course I want anyone to use it. And you know, they give credit, and a couple of these people got really, really, they've built huge followings for themselves in Germany. One being, Relodiac, his name's Christian. He was one of the close friend of mine too at this point, but he'd come out for part of the tour in Germany, and the other being Jody Calusi. And I mean, I tell those guys all the time, it's like them pushing me like is essentially why I have something going on in Germany now, you mm-hmm. know? And it's a good reminder for any artists or producers, whoever's that's listening. It's like, say yes to as many people as you can. Like, don't, you know, not in terms of like breaking your back so you can have your art shared by somebody, but like, if anybody wants to use it, so long as they give credit and they understand that there's a copyright, like, give it to anybody, you know? There's no, you know, so long as you believe in what they're doing, or you at least accept what they're doing, like, do that. So yeah, that's really where that whole thing stemmed from. And then as projects continued, you know, that was back in the Day One None days. And then, you know, Yardwork came out, and the Yardwork song from that, self-titled song from that, what got really popular over there. And then Good Lord from the Prowler LP got really, really popular over there. And so, yeah, that it's just like that, you know, and you can see all this data on Spotify, you know, like where people are listening. And so, yeah, it's always in Germany. So yeah, Germany, if any of my German fans listen to this, I seriously love you guys. Like, it's incredible, like going over there and seeing fans rock with you in another country is like, it like warms my heart, you know, like seriously, seriously humbling stuff. And like seeing some fans that like knew the words, not even their primary language, like, yeah. You know, it's just amazing. So my Germany fans, if you listen, I love you guys. And, you know, I'm always trying to figure out how to get back over there. And we're definitely planning on doing it again. So
hell yeah.
Yeah.
At what point were you like, okay, I got to go over there? Cause you know, you've got the data of where people are listening,
yeah.
But when were you like, you know what? Cause obviously it's a financial risk to just get out there.
Totally. Yeah.
So at what point were you like, you know what? It's the time.
Yeah. I mean, just numbers, right? Like I looked at where are my daily, like, you know, Spotify breaks it down by the daily for you. So I could see daily listeners, you know, by the thousands in some of the main cities in Germany. And, you know, at that point, Spotify had incorporated its, is it Songkick?
Yeah.
That populates tour dates in there. So, you know, we kind of did like a 10%, like 10% conservative estimates. Like if 10% of the people that listen to you, if 10% of the 1,000 listeners that listen to you catch wind of the fact that you're there, you know, that's 100 people. That's, you know, that's a good bet for a small venue, right? So, yeah. And so it was just checking the numbers, because, you know, and honestly, just reading the comments. Like I had a couple of my songs that were really big off of the Prowler LP flooded with hundreds of people. And that was the other way we did it is, you know, I put out videos preemptively being like, I want to come to Germany, please comment, tell me where to go. And just seeing what people suggested, you know, and seeing what was realistic to make it work. But yeah, going over there and doing that last year, I mean, that was an all-time experience, you know, and it's definitely something we're looking to continue to build off of and keep that momentum right there, you know?
Yeah, that's incredible. And it's obviously growing here too. So how has that experience been of you, like you said, you move back and it's like starting from scratch. Like,
right.
I've been in LA, I came back here. What was your mindset? And when you started planning for, you know, I'm back here, I'm going to grind and make this happen.
Yeah.
What were like your first steps? How'd you go about starting up again?
Just take shows, you know, don't even at first, right? Like just take whatever shows, you know, and so long as you align with the artist in some way, like you don't even have to necessarily like love what they're about or anything, but if they're, you know, either they're good people or their music is, you feel it to some degree, I just take any show. And I say take any show because I think I started out just doing shows that were not even like hip hop shows, right? Like, because I kind of knew people that were in like, in, you know, rock more bands, and they're just like, you want to open, you know? And I'd say, yeah, absolutely. You know, just to get in the door. And then at that point and I still do this to this very day, like mark my word, like I just go through my homie network, push as many hard tickets as I can, get bodies in the building. And all of a sudden these venues start to see, okay, this person is selling tickets. This person is putting feet on the floor inside here to see them. Let's consider them for bigger things. And then it was always, you know, from there, just continually climbing, right? Like finding larger acts to open for, trying to find national touring acts to open for that were in the same kind of lane and stuff, and just keep going like that, you know? And the other thing too is something that I'm still working at, and I know a lot of people are, is just remaining active and consistently around the scene. So you're doing that, but then you're also going and supporting your people. You're going out to shows when you can, you know, just staying around, showing that you are part of the hometown. I mean, when I first came back too, I'm kind of a in my own head overthinker. And I definitely like felt like I was much more isolated than I really am, mm-hmm. you know? And you know, it's been really nice. Like that's a huge, I say this constantly, but it's just been really nice to be part of the Seattle scene and actually, you know, like have connections with a lot of these people. And, you know, there's some really special friendships that have started to come from this thing. So again, long winded here, but the story was just take whatever at first and stay consistent too. Like those were the two things, you know, consistent with putting out music and consistent with continually finding shows and trying to open for people.
Yeah. And you brought up a really good point of it's not just getting on the shows, but finding people who are bigger.
Right.
And so how do you go about that? Are you hitting up managers for touring acts? Are you hitting the venue about, hey, if someone comes through, or are you going and finding the artist and saying, I want to play with you?
Mix of both, to be honest. I mean, for the most part, going to the bookers at the venues when you would see someone ideally that you'd like to open for, and just being as early as you can with it. A few times when artists just kind of announce that they're coming out, and then you're like, oh, well, they listed, you know, preemptively they've listed Seattle. So then, yeah, at that point I would go, if I want to be super preemptive, I would go to the manager themselves. But for the most part, trying to keep it between the bookers, because they're ultimately the ones that are going to make that decision, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So you're headlining Numos, obviously, which is huge.
Right.
What is on the docket? Like, what venues do you have your eyes on, whether it's locally or LA or elsewhere? Like, that's where I'm headed. Like, I want to get there.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you know, Numos has been one of them for a long time. So I'm super, super pumped to be there on June 8th. I'm so hyped for that. But I don't know. You know, I'll say this, though. In Hamburg, there's a real dope club called Molotow. And there's like, it's kind of, I think that's how you pronounce it. And it's like pretty historic. And I could be totally wrong on this, but I think that the Nomads played there on their last tour. And it's just a historic place. I have yet to be able to connect with them, but that's a place that I want to go and play. Yeah. And I know you asked like regionally or nationally, but that's the one that's like sticking out to me big time.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's exactly what I'm going for. Yeah. So that's awesome. In is it the same kind of approach, just hitting those bookers and being like, hey,
and the Germany thing I think is harder because you got the language barrier, even though they speak amazing English through a lot of Germany, but the, you know, there's just kind of, it's not your country. So like, yeah. I think it's easier to have, like, I worked through a booker for the last tour, you know, and I think that's always going to be the easier approach. I did the whole cold calling thing when I did a small little two-stop German tour the first time. And it was, you know, there's a lot of dead ends to be found there. Like, you can email and call and people for forever and just, you just hear silence over there. But the second I had a booker working for me, it was like, you know, things were picking up pretty quick.
Yeah. It's totally that relationship.
Yeah.
Even I feel like here having relationships with people, it's just so much quicker. Of course you can cold call and you have to.
Right. Yeah. But you know, and those, like, anytime you get a cold call on that other end of whether it's the booker at a German venue or whatever, it's like how many cold calls do you get a day? Right. And like, how many American or out, just call it international artists that you like, they're not even in your country. Right. So you're like, okay, I really got to like assess how much this person has going for them in this country, you know? Mm-hmm. So obviously, yeah. I, the cold calling game, forever endless, right? It's a career off of, this whole thing is just basically making a career out of being told no.
Yeah.
Or being told nothing, you know?
Yeah. At the end of the day, and it sucks to hear, especially for creative types, but it's a sales role.
Yeah.
Everything you do, you're selling you're selling air.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, and you have to be your biggest salesman. Like, as a pretty introverted, constantly in my head type of person, the thing I've hated the most is, was being a salesman, you know? But then I kind of did that math at some point, and just, I guess I grow more comfortable with it each year, right? It's like, I'm still super passionate about doing this. Like, this is what I want to do with my life. So why wouldn't I be the biggest salesman, right? The best salesperson that I could.
Yeah. And when it comes to like sales and marketing, the more authentic you are, and if you're doing what you want to do, like you said, it should feel easier. It shouldn't feel like selling. It's like, look,
yeah,
I'm here, I'm doing this. Like, that's the reason alone to take me. Like, I'm all about this. I'm here. We want the same thing.
Yeah.
You're not calling a show, but like, let's put on a really shitty show.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's a great point though, what you say though. And that's what I always think. It's like, well, you're not selling, you know, roof shingles for somebody that for a company that you don't own or whatever, you know, like, my point being, like, this is your own thing. If you own that roof shingle company and you were selling it, you would be pushing just as hard. Like, this is your business. This is your life. Like, this is your whole thing. Of course, you would be just pushing it so damn hard every day, you know, and doing exactly what you're saying, like giving people the most honest version of yourself. And at that point, I mean, that's what everyone always says too, right? It's like, at that point, it kind of become, it doesn't even become like marketing, right? It is because you're putting yourself out there. But when you're the honest version of yourself, that's just you, you know? And that's still something for me that I, day in and day out, I think everyone kind of goes in waves of like, oh, I want to put this much out or that much out of myself every day. But the more honest you are, it's never going to fail you. I put that as a caveat because some of these celebrities need to fucking chill.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of showing your art and what you're driven to do, you know.
Yeah. 100%. And that comes through with music too. And I'd argue just as of January being a listener.
Yeah.
Is listening to your stuff. I feel like that comes through. Obviously, like, I hadn't met you, but like listening to it.
Yeah.
I get that vibe. I feel like you can tell if you listen to someone's music and they're not about it. It's hard to craft a sound,
right?
If it's not truly you,
right?
It'll feel forced. And so yeah, that's just something I've found when listening to your stuff.
Oh, thanks,
so,
man. I appreciate that. Yeah. And sure. I totally agree. I think too, with crafting your own sound, yeah, like it has to be rooted in some sort of reality for your own life or just whatever you find important. Like and I continue along, you know, that's something that I think is always going to morph for me. You know, we even talked about just the sort of the importance / direction of the lyrics, right? And as I continue to go forward, it's like, yeah, that I feel like that vision is always going to evolve for me. That's something that always, I like that it always changes. I don't think I can just keep doing the same thing one way or another, you know?
Yeah, and like as you grow as a person, what you care about is going to change. And as long as what's coming through,
yeah,
then it's authentic.
Big
you know?
Time. Yeah, like a lot of this stuff, I was just talking with my buddy yesterday, Tommy Cassidy, who's out of the Tri-Cities. And we were just talking about that, like how kind of what, you know, yeah, 5 years ago when I was like just back from Los Angeles, and it was grind, 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 like, and it still is grind, 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 but in a kind of in a different manifestation. What was more important to me then is less important to me now in terms of what I talk about on these songs, right? And so, yeah, I totally agree with you that bigger picture that you can hear, you can kind of tell when there's authenticity in artists. Like my favorite artists have that within them, you know, of all genres. Like you can kind of just feel it one way or another. You can feel that it means something to them, you know?
Yeah. And you can tell when things have shifted for you. Like you were talking about putting in work, your song Work.
Yeah.
And then you've got Exit That Way.
Right.
That just came, which come off very differently.
Totally, yeah.
So how has your process changed, or has it changed when you're putting these songs together, and where do you start? Is it you get a beat and you go, do you go lyrics?
Yeah.
And go, or?
These days it's super, someone said this about me recently too, but it's super melody driven. Like I'm really trying to learn to sing and like become a solid singer. And I've been producing a lot of my own stuff now for a few years. And so it starts with these melodies these days. And so like, yeah, the Exit That Way song, you know, kind of it runs long. It sort of runs like an indie electronic song or something like that. And because it had always started with, I think just that, yeah, I think that one, I just had a little simple, like the drum, kind of the 104 BPM drum loop. And the bass line that's kind of like boom, 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 boom. And that was all I had at first. And for some reason, I just started humming along in that kind of robotized voice that's like, I just want to be on my own. And I just caught myself like sort of humming that part. And I was like, fuck, that's cool. And that was it. And that's kind of how the whole thing started, you know? And I drew the inspiration from the lyrics and everything after that. But so these days, yeah, because I create a lot of music, it starts from the melody, you know. I mean, I'm still working with producers outside of myself. And, you know, that's more of a like, oh, I really like that beat. That beat brings something out of me.
Yeah.
But when it's me sitting down in the actual studio, it's more like, what kind of melody is bringing that stuff out of me, you know?
For sure. Do you have specific things you look for in a beat or a melody? I know my buddy Art is really into like jazz samples,
right,
and whatnot. Do you have something that you gravitate towards, or is it just kind of experimenting around? Do you hear something, you're like, yep, that's what I want to jump on?
Crazy. Crazy to think about, because it's, I feel like that is also something that changes a lot. But the big one, I'm obsessed with piano. I know you just mentioned that he was doing an interview with you today. Shout out my guy, Jake Crocker. I love just sitting and watch Jake jam on the piano, and like everything he plays, I'm just like, damn, that is beautiful. That is beautiful. You know? And I've always loved piano, you know, and it dominates a lot of the music that I listen to these days. So I guess one would be like, yeah, any piece that's got strong piano chords, I'm just going to fall in love with it probably. And I think, yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of, for, in terms of a beat, yeah, strong piano chords. I think traditionally I've had a little more kind of pop, like the melody behind it, and maybe the key it's in, like a little more major slash kind of poppy. But these days, I don't know, it's just all over. But chords, one way, whether they're piano or otherwise, but I just love strong chords. I mean, who doesn't?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you mentioned earlier before we jumped on here, you're using Ableton, right?
Logic Pro.
Logic Pro.
Right.
All right. So, yeah. Oh, that's who it was. So Jake is Ableton.
Jake's Ableton, and then, yeah.
So how do you navigate that? Because so I have the thing where I work in a different DAW than the guy that I that's producing my stuff. So I use Pro Tools. He uses Ableton. So how do you go about that? Do you go, we're just going to work on your stuff, or do you
it kind of fluctuates. Like it's definitely case by case. Like I'm actually doing a song, working on a song right now with the Bad Tenants, who are the co-headliners with me for the June 8th show. And for them, I believe they run Ableton, and most of the time, because I made the beat and everything, I just keep it. I'll just bring my laptop over. Luckily, I have a laptop, so that helps. But like in some scenarios, I was running around, I didn't have the laptop, so yeah, I bounce out the stem. But that was, you know, like that's a one-off scenario. If I'm working with if I'm working with a Jake Crocker, or I'm working with like I work a lot with my guy Sendai Mike as well. Like I might just like sit there and go through the beat with them, and then have them send me the beat and record it, whether it's my personal studio or somebody else's studio on my own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. And how often, I know you said you're kind of doing a little bit of both right now. How often are you co-writing, and how often are you just doing the whole project yourself? Track, not project.
Track, right. Yeah. Like producing the beat for it. I'd say it's like 60 me these days. Yeah, 60, 70% me. And if you're like looking at a project, and 30% other outside producers, you know, like the last EP, Photographs of Other People, I produced three of them. Memba, which is a New York City production duo, it's two guys, they produced one, and Sendai Mike actually produced Decline. So, you know, it was like a good, my math is failing me here, but what do you call that? Like 65% roughly.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And you know, actually call it 70 or, you know, 55%. Cause my drummer, Kevin Boris, helped me a ton on I Might See on that one.
Nice.
Yeah.
Moving forward, you've got this show
coming
up. That's obviously the big thing that's next for you.
Right.
Any other plans that you're able to share, or?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think, I've got as we were just chopping it up before we started, I was telling you I'm in that process where I've got a handful of songs that I have said, okay, go with God. And I've given it to the engineer to go and work on, and we'll just see how everything comes back. But I have the bulk of a project that I'm definitely looking to push out. I would like to say by quarter four of this year.
Oh, right on.
And it's a lot more of an influenced sound, like Exit That Way. I think that's kind of the big indicator of where stuff is going for this new project. So anyone that's listening, that's getting excited, I have stuff that will be coming out sooner than you think with a project aimed for, you know, the last part of the year.
Right on.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Q4. How much, switching kind of the business side, how much do you have like planned out and broken up in that manner? And do you find it helps your creative process to kind of block things out like that and march, have a goal to march towards?
It kind of does. For big target things, you know, like this Numos show, this is no secret. This is a huge show for me. And so this was a big, you know, put this thing on the map and try and land, you know, like at one point it was just written in as like land big show for quarter two or quarter three, just yeah. land big ass Get show. It. And so, yeah, like those are kind of goals. But I also, I'm a little cautious because like I've done it before. I'll write like, okay, in quarter two, you need to release a single a month or whatever to lead up to said EP, that type of thing. But I think what I need to kind of grasp for myself is like, well, actually for the first 2 months of quarter one, you're going to just spend it exploring and trying to sing better and go. Cause like, I mean, I hit like a shit ton of creative ruts kind of, you know, I got over so a little bit in the lows kind of at the start of the year and just was just making a bunch of stuff and just being like, God, I hate this, which is all part of the process. And at this point I say I hate it, but it's not that. I'm just like, oh, this isn't what I want to put out. So for me, there's always this big exploration period. I don't think that's ever going to change, but I think ultimately when I'm looking at like quarter to quarter basis, I still have big things like, okay, EP this quarter for sure. Big show this quarter for sure. You know, festival in, you know, wherever you can land it. Like, and you kind of, it is very good to plan, but also it's like, sometimes you might like, you know, you land a festival and you have blackout dates before and after. So it's, you kind of, and you don't know exactly right away you're going to land the festival, right? So it's like, if you get something like that, then you've got to sort of reconfigure your plan a little bit, you know?
Yeah, for sure. But so that's exciting. Does that mean you have a festival date to be announced?
No, that doesn't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, that's just giving an example of how it kind of can switch up on the fly though. For you know? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, excited for you as a new, relatively new fan.
Well, this thanks, is super man. Cool. Yeah, it was. I was super thrilled when you hit me up. I mean, I'd listen. You know, you'd let me listen to a couple of the other ones, and you've got a lot of good stuff going on here. And obviously, you got IoDot, you got Jake. So you've got a lot of good people coming up. You got Evan coming, right? So yeah, you got some good guests already.
Thanks, man. Yeah, yeah, hoping to keep it growing. I'm really excited for this to come on out here and be at your Numos show. So.
Love it. Yeah. If anyone that's listening, Numos, June 8th, Friday night show, me, Bad Tenants, Scarlet Park is hosting, Martial Law Band, and Lone Wolf and Cub are opening. It's going to be crazy. Get tickets now.
Right on.
Got it. You got to do that self plug.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cheers, man. But thank you. Like I told you at the beginning too, like, and I want anyone, artists or anyone that's listening, that's doing their own thing. Like, this type of podcast is a great resource, and like a million thanks to you for having me on. It seriously means the world. Yeah.
Thanks for coming, man. Yeah. Like I said, super excited for you, and this show is going to pop off. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
We know we can see this one coming, and we feel really good about it.
Right on, man.
Yeah. All right. Cheers, man. Thank you so much. We'll be right back.
at the justice show, hair hanging on down, sweating through my soul, leaking out on the ground. 21 at the hot chip show, too drunk for the sound. Move it out back before you pass out. 21 at the Ghostland show, that's how religion get found. Put it all on my tab while the homies black out. 23 at that hospital, I can't tell you nothing now. Been a long time coming around. Exit's over that way, yo, I know I'm bound to see myself out. Been a long time coming, don't you try helping me out. Exit's over that way, yo, I know I'm bound to see myself out. Been a long time running, please stop fucking around. You see, I gotta get down. You see, I gotta get down. 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 Give it to him one time. Off the floor with my pride and kept on smiling on him with no fluoride. Extra go time, midnight, 405. Don't you ever tell me shit about who's born to ride. Had to slide my belongings, other half I pawned them. Homies couch and garage, I'll be out by the morning. I'm outperforming from where I was then. Tongue was a sword, but it still came with dope ends. No sense, no Photoshop filter, no lens. Not losing sometimes, the reason you don't win, go in. Otherwise you go down, long time coming around. You feel it?
That was Exit That Way by Nick Weaver, his latest single. Be sure to catch him co-headlining Numos with the Bad Tenants Friday, June 8th. Tickets are on sale now. You don't want to miss this one. And if you want to listen to the artists that we've been discussing during these episodes, follow Made For Music on Spotify, as we're actually going to be putting together playlists comprised of the songs that we discuss on both the local and national level. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please go ahead and rate us on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is. We really appreciate y'all helping us out there, and we will see you next time.